Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 45, for June 19th, 2007. Talk time. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. Time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers nothing but iPhones all the time. You might as well just call it the Scott Bourne Apple Phone Show. Part two.
Well, thank you, Leo. If you're not sick of hearing about the iPhone on the Apple Phone Show, you can listen to us here.
Well, we're going to cover it in, somehow differently. I don't know how, but somehow. And
we'll
there is no other story. I mean, we've got to, as much as I wish we didn't have to, we've got to cover it because it's coming out a week from Friday. Also here, back from his travels around the world, Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. Hello, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great to have you back. We missed you terribly.
It's good to be back.
Did you have a good trip?
I did. I had a great trip. I got to travel over a large portion of southern and eastern Africa, and ended up in Arusha, Tanzania, for TED Global.
Yeah, you did a nice piece on that on our TV show, The Lab with Leo. So,
hey, thanks.
Yeah, people will be able to see some video of that stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, it was a really well done conference. You know, it's one of those things you don't know. I had never been to a TED before, so I didn't know what to expect. And it was a very complex conference to do because there was, 400 people in 8 different hotels that are all 40 minutes apart. So to get everybody into the same place at the same time was pretty exciting. And there was a lot of great speakers, and Bono and the president of Tanzania and, all that fun stuff. So it was good.
Good. Well, welcome back. Also, Merlin Mann is here. He of the 43 folders.
I had this idea. I'm going to abandon it. But I did have an idea that every time somebody said the word iPhone, I was going to imagine that they were actually saying dengue fever. And I was just something to mix it up, something to keep it kind of interesting.
Kind of is like dengue fever when you're talking about it. I mean, it's spreading rapidly.
It's hemorrhagic. It's very painful.
Hemorrhagic,
I think it is. I think that's the way a lot of the other cell phone manufacturers and
they've got to be plotzing. I mean, they've got to be looking at this and looking at the attention it's getting, and not just in our little corner of the world where we're, of course, we're enthusiasts. But I just saw a story that said 2 out of 3 people know about the iPhone. That's a huge recognition factor.
And I guess they said that, I guess the new thing now is 19 million people are interested in buying one.
That gets me. Those are 90 million people who haven't seen the price tag yet.
Well, it's not a lot of these stories where, the rising tide raises all boats. I mean, there's so many kinds of technology problems.
This sinks everybody else.
It does. This is people do not, except for total nerds, there aren't that many people that buy $200-$600 phones.
Right. Hey, Scott, have you looked at the iPhone clones? Because there are a lot of them now. Have you played with any of these?
The closest I've come is I've played with the Nokia 995 that you have.
Yeah, I mean, it's not trying to be an iPhone. It's not a touch screen and so forth. It's just a full.
No, we've asked to get some review units. They're on the way allegedly, and we do want to do some comparisons. But as soon as the iPhone comes out, part of my focus will be making sure I learn everything that it does well first,
right?
And then we'll start to do some comparisons. And today, obviously, some interesting news came out that Apple issued a press release talking about extended battery life and a different cover for the phone. That's going to create even more buzz.
Why would they wait till 2 weeks before it comes out to make that announcement?
Maybe just to make John C. Dvorak look like a jackass.
Why? Was he complaining about battery life?
Oh, yeah. 45 minutes was his claim.
Well, we don't know. I mean, I'll tell you right now that it's not going to get what Apple's claiming.
No, but if it gets half what it's claiming, it's 10 times more than what everybody else is saying.
Yeah, well, again, we won't know till it comes out. It's easy to say all this.
They do have a chart up that on their website that shows a comparison.
There you go. They got a chart.
Oh, there's a chart. I didn't know there was a chart.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
And the chart is based on the same claims that are made by other cell phone carriers, which are obviously also optimistic.
Maybe they're less optimistic than Apple's, though. There's no standard for optimism.
That's true. We'll find out.
What is the optimism multiplier? Is there a stand? You say we don't know. I don't think Apple would start trumpeting this battery life unless they really did think they were going to have some substance. I mean, this is substantive.
Yeah, it's a lot of battery
life. 8 hours talk time is longer than almost any phone I know.
I know.
Internet use 6 hours, video playback 7 hours, audio playback 24 hours.
It doesn't have a video phone. It doesn't have a video camera, right? It just does still.
Do we know that? I don't know if we know that.
Yeah. Well, we don't know for sure.
Okay. Nobody's ever said anything about video, and we do know it's a 2-megapixel camera, which is a little disappointing.
And then another thing that I saw, and I don't know whether you guys talked about this or not, the idea that you're going to have to buy the data whether you're going to use it or not, the data service.
We have no confirmation of that yet.
Yeah, all of this is unknown. That's the problem.
And I think that's going to be the thing that is the difference between them selling 3 million in the first 2 weeks and them selling, you know, half.
I don't know. I think people are going to get. Look, a lot of people are going to be in line on Friday. Yep. They will all buy a phone, regardless of what they're told at the counter. That'll be $1 million in your first one. Thanks. Where do I give you the check? I mean, it does. They're going to wait in line for that long. They're going to buy the phone.
Right.
Of course, that's not. But I don't know. What is that? 1 million? I don't know how many that is. Who knows? Well, I don't think we've ever seen. This is comparable to this is comparable to the excitement over the PlayStation 3 or the Nintendo Wii. Except that, unlike those, this crosses demographic borders. I mean, you're only interested in a PlayStation 3 if you're a gamer. This is everyone. This is businessmen. This is anybody who uses a cell phone, which is everyone. I have to say, I think this is the largest consumer product launch ever.
And it'll either be really, really good or really not so.
Or maybe in the middle. We don't know. Yeah. Well, they say their battery life is going to be a lot better than mine. My Nokia N95, like twice as good. Almost as much. BlackBerry Curve, 4 hours. Palm Trio, 4 hours. Blackjack, 5.5. 8 hours is great. I mean, if they get 8 hours, you know what? I would buy it just for that.
I think my Palm Trio is like really 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, that's really good.
7 hours of video.
How does your Nokia actually perform relative to that chart? Does it get
it's
what
impossible.
It says?
First of all, do you know anybody that talks for 4 hours in one charge? I don't know. I haven't talked that long. It's not talking that wears down my phone. It's GPS. It's Jaiku. It's data. So if I've got the GPS going, the data going, I'm sending pictures back and forth, I can run it down pretty quick. But I've also learned what not to do. I turn off the Bluetooth when I'm not using it, things like that. And it gives me all-day charge. I mean, it's still at 5 bars right now. Here we are. We're taping this at 5 in the evening. So it's fully charged right now, and I've been using it all day. I've made a few calls. But who talks 5 hours or 8 hours? I mean, how would you even know?
Talk to some producer in L.A.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I think we expect any smartphone, we expect to charge it at night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is, does it get through the day? And it looks like this will.
That blows me away. There's 7 hours of video playback. I mean,
that's
when
Dad
and I came back. Yeah, we came back from Rhode Island, and we were able, on a fully charged iPod video, we were able to watch exactly 2 episodes of The Wire.
Right.
So, which I actually have the DVD for.
Thank you for clarifying that.
There's a photo on Flickr. I own the DVD.
I can't. You know why I had to buy the DVD? I couldn't find episode 2 on the newsgroups. So.
So good. But I mean, the thing is, that's a tiny little, I think that's a smaller screen than the iPhone. And
low resolution, yeah.
So what did they do? Is it a bigger battery? I mean, what did they do to make this iPhone battery life longer?
They did not release that information. Obviously, it's either a better battery or less power usage, but they did not disclose that. I put some calls into Apple PR today, which went unanswered on that issue.
I'm not going to tell you anything. They also announced, and I think this is a very encouraging move, a glass screen, not a plastic screen.
I think I was far more excited about the glass screen than I was about the battery, to be honest, because my iPod, I admit I did not treat my video iPod very well, but it's pretty scratched up. It's kind of hard to watch.
Plastic's terrible. Yeah.
Of course, all the haters immediately started with, okay, well, now it's going to break.
Well, that could be. I have to tell you, touch screens are usually pretty hard to read.
Because of all the fingerprints and stuff.
Well, that and the reflectance, the luminance. Now, it's gotten better, so we'll see. I mean, look, this could be a groundbreaking product, and it looks to be a groundbreaking product, which means it'll have better battery life than anybody expected, a better screen, fewer fingerprints, or not. I don't know. I mean,
Works well as a phone and syncs with my contacts, I'll be happy.
Well, I got that already. I have no trouble with Bluetooth in my Nokia.
Nope. Hey, Leo, did you see, Rattle, did you see that the new Missing Sync does Yojimbo?
Ooh, I like that. What does it sync it to? What does it sync it to?
I'm not sure. I think it must, I'm guessing it must go into Memos.
Yeah.
I'll double check my facts on that, but somebody just told me that in past, which is awesome.
That's nice. Yeah, I don't use Missing Sync. I use, believe it or not, Apple iSync. It still lives. It lives on in certain cases, and in this case, with the Nokia Symbian operating system, you use iSync, and it does a great job.
Missing Sync on my Trio has been, again, such a repeated
topic.
We've
done this over and over, I know.
No, but the other thing that's great about it, though, is it handles things like, it's got the Mark Space has its own conduits for things like tasks and calendars.
Right.
It handles it much better than the stock setup, in my experience.
Well, yeah, I have a paid for Missing Sync, so maybe I should try it.
So here it is. Missing Sync, this is on the unofficial Apple weblog. Adds Yojimbo Notes, Trio SMS, and more.
I sync my Trio like once every 3 months and brace for impact.
Yeah, syncing is always a risky thing.
I did get an email from a listener, folks, that said that one of the reasons I might have been having trouble with the Missing Sync on my Trio was that apparently Verizon had some weird thing you had to do first to get it to work right, and I never did that. So I always had bad luck with Missing Sync. I'm using Verizon. Merlin, you're using a different carrier. Maybe that was why you got the Missing Sync love and I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
I'm also using Verizon, and I also had lots of unhappiness.
So here's the rundown of what I've been told what's going to happen. Apple stores will close, and I presume this is AT&T stores as well. By the way, only company-owned stores, not franchisees, not independents. Only company-owned stores will close at 4 p.m. The FedEx man will come a-knocking sometime between 4 and 5 with an unspecified number of phones. They're going to get them that day. An hour before they open. Then at 6 o'clock, they open the doors.
My sources are saying that they will arrive in armored cars.
That's got to be really
expensive.
Whenever
you say that, Scott, whenever you talk about your sources, and with respect, I always imagine you doing like a little Senior Wences hand where you've like got little eyes on there.
They will be arriving in armored
cars. Johnny, tell me, when will the iPhones be here? All right. iPhones come at 6. Armored cars. Close the door.
I don't think they'll do armored cars to all Apple stores. And I mean, I'm sure the big stores they will to make a big splash.
Also, we have not been able to confirm the 4 o'clock time, Leo. We've heard different times of closing.
Okay. It is a rolling rollout. So if you, I think, frankly, Scott, if you really cared, you'd go to New York. You'll get it 3 hours early.
I have Vinny Ferrari in New York City standing by.
So he'll get it. He could actually have a review before we even touch the phone. He could save you a lot of money. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to, can I tell people what your plan is?
Yeah.
Mr. Moneybags here, Mr. Thurston Howell III.
It's not Moneybags. It don't start it that way. It's just.
How
it's
many
just,
phones do you plan to buy?
Just 12.
At that store?
At that store.
And you have runners at every other store?
Just in case, to buy another 12.
So how many do you hope to get?
I would love to get 24, but I need 12.
One for each pocket? What? I don't.
Well, some of, you know, my team members, the staff at the company would like phones.
You do the number one Apple phone show called Apple Phone Show at applephoneshow.com. So, of course, you need to. This is your job.
Yeah. And we have to have one that we're going to actually tear apart so we can see what it looks like. I'm pretty sure that'll void the warranty, but I was going to check with Merlin on that.
It'll probably still work, though.
We're going to give one away on the show. So we have to have that
That's
one.
Good.
And then I have to have a couple of backups in case you guys get wonky on me and decide you want one after all.
You mean like mention that promise you made?
I mean the one you promised you were going to give us?
You know, I would just encourage everybody to listen to that show carefully and then we'll have the answer.
I'm gonna quote Hank Hill from the first episode of King of the Hill. Don't play lawyer ball.
No.
Play baseball, Scott. Lawyer ball. You said you're going to give us phones, and if you don't, you know, if you want to skate on that, that's fine. But don't go like pulling your spectacles down your nose to pretend like you didn't say that.
It doesn't matter. I don't want your stinking phone.
If they were shipping the day of Macworld, you'd get one. That's it.
I'll just hang out outside the store and collect everybody's Trios.
That could be profitable.
They should have that, like the Zoom people tried to do with a recycled phones out in the front of the Apple store. So how do I get my, what's the best way to get an iPhone?
Depends on who you believe, but Mr. Jobs allegedly told a prominent blogger that the best way to get an iPhone was to go to an AT&T store.
besides being Walt Mossberg. You know, he has one. He got one on the 12th.
Yeah. Hey, does David Polk have one yet?
I don't know. I haven't asked David, but I'm betting not. I know that Walt pretty much throws his weight around and says, look, if you want coverage, you'll get it to me before you get it to the Times. So the Wall Street Journal has its iPhone. I don't know any other journalist that has one, unless they've been signed to, not say anything, which they may be. But Walt was very upfront about it. He said, yeah, if he pulled it out, he showed people. Yeah, I got mine. Got it today.
He was still thinking about, he hadn't used it enough to make a decision one way or another on thought.
He was speaking to a university audience and pulled it out. They went, ooh. He said, but I'm not going to tell you what I think yet because I haven't had it long enough. But
Hey, Leo, you've been doing this stuff for a pretty long time. You've been around a lot. Have you ever seen like this level of froth and madness about a computer kind of?
Well, like
product?
I said, the only one that comes close is the game console rollouts. I mean, people were fighting each other for PlayStation 3s. It turned out mistakenly. Because you can get one easily now.
But, I mean, it's one thing, like, I'm thinking here, like, we've seen stuff like Cabbage Patch Dolls and stuff. But, for something, that costs $600.
No, as I said earlier, I think this is the largest rollout of a consumer electronics item ever. Biggest story. I've never seen so much verbiage, expended on it. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And and a lot of hype. I mean, I hope people aren't terribly disappointed. On the other hand, I'm hoping that we'll all be pleasingly, impressed.
Well, we're going to take our 12 if we get them and put them in a lockbox inside the store and get them home some other time.
But yeah, I was going to say, if you try to walk out of that store full of 12 iPhones, you're going to be mugged.
I'm not doing that. It's like when I was standing on the side of the street there by the store, Leo, with all my Mac Pros, and you had to drive up in the car and get me.
There's a big difference. There wasn't a line of 1,000 people out front trying to get one. You're gonna if you really do get 12, did they promise you that you would get 12?
I can't really say they promised, but I have hope that that's going to happen.
So if they ever want to see their family again.
So I'm thinking the best place to go, which is probably not where I'm going to be because of my fiduciary responsibility as a professionally trained journalist. I think the best place to go would be a small town AT&T company store.
That would be correct. Yeah. However, we hear that there may be as few as 20 phones per AT&T company store.
Oh, well. But see, here in Petaluma, I don't know if there are going to be 20 people in line to get one.
That's a good bet.
We'll see. I might just do that. Here's another thing. I'm an AT&T customer. I could just say, I have my Trio. Or no, I'm sorry, I have a BlackBerry. I could just say, well, look, I just want to
That may actually work against you.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, only new customers, please turn around and walk.
Well, I've had two different fairly, I believe, believable sources contact me and say that they are existing AT&T business customers. They are customers of AT&T that represent large corporations. They called about iPhones and were told essentially, look, we're trying to use this to get new customers. You'll get yours in a few weeks. Huh. So I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard.
I have to say that and I'm sure that Apple is not seeding journalists with it. They don't need to, right? We're all going to wait in line and buy one.
Yeah, the more scarcity there is, especially among journalists, the more buzz there's going to be.
Right.
That releases all the tension once you let somebody have that. Otherwise, then it becomes really, desired.
If I buy I guess I can't go online and buy one until then, right?
Well, supposedly you'll be able to get them online at the Apple Store at 6 p.m. We don't know if that's 6 p.m. Eastern or Pacific, but we will.
It's rolling. Apparently local. It's 6 p.m. local time.
So I will have somebody online ready to order phones as well.
But you won't get it until at best Monday.
Well, that's okay. That'll be my backup group.
Yeah, you're going to end up with like 1,000 phones. You know that.
Can't you pre-order right now?
No.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else to say about this? Steve Jobs said the best way to do it is to go to an AT&T store.
It was an off-the-cuff comment that he allegedly made to Arianna Huffington at a conference where she asked him what was the best way.
Steve, darling, what is the best way to get my phone?
And allegedly, Apple PR has since denied that he said that. Huffington Post has not retracted.
Why would that be a better place than an Apple store? Would they have more?
He said, according to the quote, that it's going to be chaos at the Apple store. You'll be better off at an AT&T store. I don't think you'll be better off at either one. I think if you really got to have one on the 29th, you got to do what I'm doing. You got to have multiple attacks. You have to have different approaches.
May I propose a slight correction in direction to talk about some stuff that you can do with your iPhone?
That would be great.
I think it's one thing that's kind of interesting. We are starting to see some websites crop up that are just out there to talk about the quote-unquote applications that are becoming
and
available.
These are the applications that are running in Ajax.
Safari, yeah. iPhoneApplicationList.com is one. I don't know if that's the one we were thinking of.
That's a good one. Also, there's another one I just saw a little bit ago. I haven't played with this yet, but it looks like, I want to get the address for this right. It's a site where you can go and it has a simulated iPhone interface that handles.
Oh, that you could play them.
Script.
Oh, that's neat. On iPhoneApplicationList.com, if you use Safari, some of these applications will actually run.
Right.
Because they're all Safari applications.
Yeah, and I mean, there is
a Facebook. I think there's a Facebook interface.
Looks like there's a Twitter,
Jaiku
app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A gas app. You can pop in your zip code and tells you where. I mean, these are web apps, but I mean, you know, I guess it's, you know, personally, it's more promising to me to look at, you know, what are people actually going to potentially be able to do with this first day out. I know a lot of my friends who do software development are kind of scrambling right now to see what they can get out, you know, in time.
This one, iActu, is a newsreader that actually puts little pictures of the newspaper on. That's pretty cool.
There is a iPhone bar camp for developers slated here in the Bay Area, guys, starting July the 8th. So they're all going to get together and try to develop apps right there on the scene at the bar camp for 2 days. So I'm going to be covering that. That looks like that will bring about some pretty interesting stuff along these lines, Merlin.
Did they find a location yet?
They have not picked it, but they're supposed to call me later today or tomorrow and tell me because we're going to sponsor it.
This would be, I mean, I have to say, if you're a developer, I could see why you'd want to jump on this bandwagon pretty darn quick. And it's not hard to develop. I mean, it's stuff is, you know, you already know, right?
Yeah, grab the prototype library and start hacking around.
Here's a dig. Gcalc. A tiny Ajax applet that calculates the running costs of tech gear based on power consumption, running time, and domestic electricity costs. And it's got a big ad in it, a Google ad in it. That's another thing you could do now. You could just use, you know, AdSense and put it right
monetize.
In here. Monetize.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see. You know, I sat through a couple of the WWDC things about, you know, what you can do. Because at first we were a little upset that we weren't going to be able to use a lot of the interactive features inside of QuickTime. You know, we're trying to add a lot of clickable items.
And it's so great for you.
Yeah. Well, and we were a little concerned about it. But to be honest, our fears were allayed when we really saw that if we really start looking at, you know, SVG and looking at, you know, how we can build it into Safari. I mean, the thing that I didn't want to do, which is build it into a web page. But if we can actually, if we figure out how to make all of that work, we can actually get really interactive video experiences that you can use on your iPhone, and we can get them out pretty quickly. There's still going to be a lot of development. It's not quite ready yet. But by the fall, we should see some of that. And that's going to be, I think, a pretty interesting process.
No Flash, though, right?
No Flash, but we don't really use Flash, so I don't really care.
You may not care, but YouTube might. Although they say there's a way to play YouTube. I mean, some of these, this YouTube player says, oh, we don't need Flash. We have, H.264 YouTube video.
Which is, what is it doing? I guess it's taking a selection and then reconverting it to H.264.
I don't know. Maybe they have a deal with Google.
Remember how quickly, let's remember just not long ago, how quickly the Apple TV was hacked?
Yeah.
I kind of am wondering, what is it going to take? Is there going to be a bunch of hacks within a few days of the iPhone?
A lot of people will be trying.
Will they respond similarly, just sort of turn a blind eye to it?
They will not turn a blind eye to that, I can guarantee you.
Okay.
And if they don't, Singular or AT&T won't. I think that's very different. I think they realize it sells Apple TVs, and it doesn't do them any harm because the Apple TV is not sitting on a public network, but your phone is. I think that's a very risky thing to. I'm sure they've made it as hack proof as they can.
Well, I have a question. Yesterday, Matt Howey had a really interesting post on his site, A Whole Lot of Nothing, titled "Some Lingering iPhone Questions I Haven't Heard Answered Elsewhere." And one I don't have an answer to. He has six pretty good questions here. Do you know, Scott, whether this will have an airplane mode? Will there be a way? I mean, given obviously you've got to have a phone plan to make the thing work. What will you do on a plane? Can you shut off the phone part of it? Do you know? And still use it as like a video player?
I can't say for sure, but it appears that they've thought about that. That's about as far as I can go.
They'd be crazy. It has to. It's really, all that means is you just turn off the transmitter. And that
right,
way,
like on a Trio, you can shut off your phone part while you hold down the power button.
And on BlackBerries, you can. I mean, most phones now you have an offline mode.
That's more than just a security issue. One of the things is if it can't pick up a signal, especially when it's at 35,000 feet, it'll burn the battery into the ground.
Ah, good point.
You know, and
yeah,
so
it'll be looking for a signal.
Yeah, it literally just goes. And on top of that, if you're worried about getting cancer
that
or anything else,
it's the battery.
It's not only draining the battery. There's like a 3-foot radius around your phone that is really hot.
Oh, really? Huh.
Anytime it can't, I was talking to a phone engineer while I was sitting on one of my flights, and he was like, you know, there's lots of good reasons to. The big thing is that with the phones on a plane, what happens is that the GSM. I don't know. You guys probably know this because we're doing all these shows. Is you hear that click 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 when the anytime a GSM phone is getting a call, CDMA does not do that. So if you have a CDMA phone, it doesn't actually affect the audio of the in the plane, you know, when they're doing conferencing. But a GSM phone will, every time it talks to the network, you hear this clicking. And we get that a lot in the studio. I'm sure you get that at Leo at the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so anybody who's got a GSM phone, if it's CDMA, it won't do it. But if it's a GSM phone, it'll click across the thing. And that obviously causes trouble when you're trying to talk to the tower. And then you end up in the wrong lane. And then you run into a plane. And, you know, bad things happen.
Bad things.
And so then but the other thing is that he explained that the other issues were, one is that it'll burn the battery all the way to the ground in one flight. Like one 5-hour flight, it will burn most, if you leave it on, it'll, and I've noticed that, you know, your battery's almost dead if you accidentally leave it on. And then the second thing is that if you're worried, if you ever have any worry about radiation, the only time you should worry about it is when your phone can't find a signal, because then it's at full power, you know, reaching out trying to find a signal, and it's never hotter as far as RF.
So you don't want to hold it very close to your genitals while it's looking for a signal.
Leaving it in your pocket. Leaving it in your pocket when it can't find a signal is, you know, not healthy.
I just got this.
I was just thinking the opposite, Merlin.
Really excited about, yeah. Oh, you're saying that would it's like vasectomy, a $500 vasectomy, basically.
Exactly. Of course, there's the chemo. You know, the
yeah, and if you want to use your Safari in this kind of offline mode that we've talked about, you know, using things like Google Gears or whatever to allow you to do your calendar and all your other stuff and then sync up, you've got to have an offline mode. I'd be shocked if they didn't. Really, it's a question of, is it in software or is there a nice switch on the side, which I really appreciate on some phones. You could just turn off the radio, boom, like
just in
that.
Terms of the crazy, like, Yellow Submarine style guessing about stuff, I have to say one of the most potentially fascinating it's a rumor but more of like just crazy speculation is to just think about how the combination, so we know that, you know, Google and Apple do things together and they have this relationship. Just the idea of bringing something like Google Gears across all of the Google apps, first of all on the desktop, is to me fairly disruptive. But then bringing that along on
you
the phone
you mean disruptive
as well.
In a good way for everybody but Microsoft.
Disruptive for everybody but Redmond, yeah. Because, right. I mean, that's if you start getting your spreadsheets and your docs, as well as your news and your Gmail, they don't do Gmail yet. I think, is news the only one, the newsreader is the only one that works with Gears right now? Right?
It was the first one. I don't know if they've added any since, but yeah, it was the first one.
I mean, you think about adding an offline, so all of a sudden the not having IMAP wouldn't be as big a deal. As it is for me right now. I would never switch to Gmail exclusively just because it doesn't do IMAP. But that idea of having all that stuff work on your desktop as an app that you can use on a plane, and conversely having that sync and work with your phone, that makes me raise an eyebrow. That's That, I mean, again, they're not, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but that would be a hell of a play.
What else did Matt say? Unanswered questions. Maybe Mr. iPhone Apple.
Yeah, he had a really good one. I like this number three. He says the interfaces look fantastic, but is the music player going to be something I can use by feel? And I take his point because, you know, I've almost, as my wife has pointed out to me, I've almost creamed a couple of vehicles playing with my GPS.
Right.
And you know, you can work an iPod pretty well with a no look. And so, you know, how much will this be like a good freestanding player that you can just kind of work? Will you have to be in CoverFlow, for example, to fly through lists? Do you know anything about that, Scott? Is there another view besides CoverFlow for moving
through
your stuff?
There's some audio feedback that might help. And the one of the issues I wonder about is, and I've received several emails from listeners about this, from people who are visually impaired. They're like, well, am I going to be able to use this phone?
Right.
Because they're used to buttons they can tactily feel. Mm-hmm. And I put a, once again, an unanswered question into Apple about that. I don't know, you know, how that could work, frankly.
I think not.
That's a really good point. That had not occurred to me at all.
Does the ADA require, if you make a device, that it be accessible? I don't think they do.
Well, I think the answer is that the audio feedback technically fulfills that requirement, but there is some audio feedback, Merlin, and whether or not that's going to be sufficient, you know, we can surely answer this question about his six questions. We'll know the answer to all of them on the 29th.
Yeah. The other one of his that I thought was good is there going to be a way to shut off CSS in Safari? And actually, our friend Chris Weatherall responds by saying that he had a chance to play with an iPhone and saw that it indeed doesn't seem to do the sideways scrolling.
Why would you want to shut off CSS?
Because some CSS, if you make a div that's, you know, 1200 pixels and do it absolute positioning or whatever, it's going to off the page.
Well, now with Safari currently, you can have your own CSS. You can override the CSS. Most
that's
browsers
true.
Let you.
Yeah, well, OmniWeb does that. But yeah, it's interesting. And I you know, one of the things I think Blazor actually does fairly okay is the way that it renders web pages.
That's
the browser
in your Trio.
In your Trio. I'm sometimes surprised with how well it handles even putting in images and stuff like that. But yeah, so anyway, that's good to know. It's
clear that Safari unmodified is not a good browser for a cell phone. So one would hope that they've made a lot of modifications to make it better for the iPhone.
You know, I'm going to play Scott for a minute here and say, I'm just going to guess that the Safari experience on this is going to be pretty nice.
Yeah, that's a big selling point for them.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like we always like, oh, but they made the iPod, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is one thing I think I have a feeling they're going to get this part of it right, is having the browser be good. Because that, to me, has a lot of wow factor to it. And by the same token, if you bought this quote-unquote smartphone, or I guess I don't know if they're calling it a smartphone, but if you buy a web browser phone and you call it Safari and it sucks, that's going to really disappoint people.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the chances are that it will be as bad as all the other ones that are currently out there? Because there's a lot of bad ones out there right
well,
now.
Well, you know, we go down this road sometimes. I don't think we can play both.
It can only be an improvement. In fact, this phone needs to do, it just needs to satisfy most people. We're not talking uber geeks.
Well, I kind of disagree, Scott. We can't play both sides of the street on this.
Moderately good, because so many of the phones I've tried just completely suck.
Over. You can't play both sides of the street on this. On the one hand, we're saying that this is going to be so fundamentally different and better that it represents a paradigmatic shift in this space. That's really different from saying it's not as bad as Blazor. So, I mean, I think it's reasonable to have expectations that, you know, that may not be reasonable to have those expectations, but I can see people saying, you know, I really want this to be a wow kind of product.
Well, believe me, I do. I do too, but I'm wondering. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah.
I will admit that I'll be happy if I can use it. I mean, I don't find any of the phone browsers something that I would actually, I mostly just swear at them.
You especially know I mean? At edge speeds.
Yeah, you're just like, oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, so the idea of being able to just, and you know, here in San Francisco, the ability to get to a Wi-Fi is pretty easy. I'm not, you know, that was the interesting thing I thought about, that I thought was interesting, is that you may have to buy a data plan, whether you're going to use it or not. Because I know for me, I am almost never going to use the data plan. I mean, all I really care about is the Wi-Fi.
I wonder though, Alex, I'm going to talk out of my butt for a minute, as I often do. I wonder how much, I'm thinking, I want to call it port blocking. I wonder what protocols they're going to allow and what sort of, you know, if there's going to be some ways that they're going to manage the kinds of traffic that you're allowed to be.
It's already been rumored that the ports that you would need for Skype and that type of thing are going to be shut off.
Right.
You know, so you're not going to be able to use Skype on this phone you know, you're not going to probably be able to use Skype on anything until Apple releases something that is just like it without a phone. You know, and I don't know when. And that's what I would prefer. I mean, we've talked about that in the past. I mean, I don't really need a phone. You know, but I'd rather have a cheap, you know, crappy little phone that I just, you know, I don't talk on the phone very much, though. So. And I just killed the conversation with that.
Speaking of GPS, there is a rumor that Apple is going to do a GPS unit of its own. Any credibility to that?
And it's not related to the iPhone, this rumor.
Right. It's just a standalone GPS unit.
There's been a lot of rumors for 2 or 3 years.
Why would they do that?
Well, it's just another, it is a killer app. You know, when GPS is actually integrated properly into a system, I mean, there is an enormous industry that's waiting to happen.
Oh, so you're saying build it into the MacBooks or something like that?
Well, build it into everything or make it available as an extra peripheral that works with your Mac.
One thing that is true is that a lot of these GPS devices don't work on Macs.
There's a Sprint application. I'm in their little ambassador thing, so I get these phones with unlimited service on them to be able to try everything out. And something I would never use because it would just blow through a data plan like crazy. But the recent phones I've been getting have a pretty nice built-in program.
Telenav or something?
I want to say something like On Demand, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, but this to me, the first time I opened this up, it blew my mind because I opened it up and I went to the map. And there was a little tick box for saying, show me where I am. And it places you right on a map. And you can then go out. It's not super easy to use, but you can then go out and say, well, show me nearby, you know, whatever, ATMs, show me how to get here from here to there.
You can also buy turn-by-turn directions from that point.
That's right. Yeah. But if you add to the mix, imagine them getting into a relationship with somebody like Yahoo or Google in terms of local. Everybody knows local is where a lot of the dough is going to be in the next few years. If you had some way to have those local services advertising and that kind of place-based commerce stuff going on, that's a lot of dough.
And if you come from a content point of view, from Apple's point of view on an iTunes, what if you were able to, for instance, let's say download an MP3 that was accessed at different times based on your GPS point? You could do like a download a tour of Route 66.
Right.
And what it does is it plays music and tells you all the history about Route 66. And then right when you get to something, it says, oh, by the way, to the left is this. Or
your whole world becomes a museum tour.
That's badass. Yeah, I mean, you can have like basically POIs. You get a POI files for certain areas. And that would be really cool.
Well, I mean, the idea of location-based services is huge. I mean, you can go on and on. I mean, obviously, this is a coming thing.
So much money there. Somebody who can get that right.
Yeah, I think that's the answer to your question, Leo.
Yeah. I don't understand why Apple would make a standalone GPS, handheld GPS unit or try to compete with Garmin and make a Nuvi, but I could see why they would put it into existing devices. So what is the rumor, though? Is it that they want to GPS enable their laptops, or is it, I mean, they're not even putting it in the cell phone.
The words were standalone GPS.
Yeah, see, that's what I don't get.
But I think that could also be the first step towards something more complicated. So you have standalone that feeds everything that they already have, and then you would obviously see that getting built into more and more stuff. I could definitely see
easy to build GPS into. I mean, like I said, many phones now, including this phone, have GPS in them.
I mean, GPS is. I mean, now you can get a little USB thing that will follow you around and give you all the data, and then you can pop it into your computer. So.
Right. So that's why I think that would make sense for Apple. I don't understand why they would want to do a Garmin Nuvi style standalone unit and try to compete with Garmin and Magellan and TomTom and Mio and all these other companies in this space.
Go ahead.
They might have some sort of plan to let you link that to the iPhone and somehow take that data with you. I'm not sure.
Right.
All I know is ever since I got a Nuvi, I don't get lost as much.
I think they're great. I love them.
Well, do you have the one that you can walk around with, Merlin?
Mm-hmm.
You have the one that you can walk with and it still tells you what to do?
Yeah, well, there's a setting where you can go in. It's a Nuvi 360, and you can go in and say, are you on a car or motorcycle? Are you on foot, et cetera? And we used it in Rhode Island, and it was just fantastic to be able to say, okay, well, like, show me nearby sandwich places. Where can I get seafood near here?
Oh, I have the same one. It's really good.
Yeah, it is. It's a little, when I very first got it, because I'm a dork, I did like use it constantly for really stupid stuff, and you really got to watch it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, using it while you're driving is a bad idea, but it talks to you. And my only other tip for the Nuvi is set it to turn the backlight off very quickly, because it will continue to talk to you. And because that thing just blows through power if you leave the backlight on.
Yeah. You're supposed to leave it plugged
in. I like the Western Australia voice.
Oh, we tried that. We tried, I think it was Emily. We tried the English woman for a while.
But here's the cool thing about the Australia voice, because I also live in Washington. Whenever it sees a Washington State highway, instead of saying Washington State Route 16, she always goes, Western Australia 16.
Oh, how funny.
It's terribly funny.
So she's reading abbreviations.
She reads abbreviations as if they were Australian, every single time. Yeah. I can't get over it.
Yeah, I have a little Mio that I hang around my neck. It's for foot travel. And it's very handy if you're in a... I got it for Vancouver, so I could find
it. Well, you know what it's great for? If you're like me and you're just not very smart, I'll add a... once again, one of my embarrassing revelations. I used to do stuff like sometimes I'll take a photograph.
How do I get home from here?
I'm hungry. there's the trick of like photographing where you are in a parking garage. Yeah. If you're in a really big, like huge...
You don't use GPS to find your car, do you?
I make a waypoint that shows my car. Hey, you know?
Turn left at the yellow Buick.
You're Merlin, getting closer to your car.
You're starting to remind me of the character in that new HBO show, John from Cincinnati. Some things I know, some things I don't.
All I know is I'm becoming a lot more like Mr. Magoo than I'd really like.
You know, it's actually encouraging for those of us as we get older, because now really pretty much technology is designed to take over where our brains leave off. I use Google Assisted Memory all the time. I don't remember anything, but I can find it fast.
My brain leaves off a lot, Leo.
Yeah, exactly.
When I need to find something, I don't even think about trying to spell it. I mean, I just kind of bang something that's close to it into the Google search.
Did you mean serendipity?
Yeah.
You guys littered up. Have you guys littered up any POI files?
Any what?
Points of interest. You can go out and, for example, get a POI file of all of the traffic cameras.
Right.
And it'll let you know when one's coming up. There's also a really great website out there that I can get for show notes that lets you take a Google Map, a KML file, and turn it into a Waypoints file for your Nuvi or for your whatever. So you can make a trip in Google Earth, export that as a KML, and then bring that into your... So if you're going somewhere and you want to see, like, remember where your friend's staying or whatever, you can put all that into your Nuvi when you go.
I made my own.
You made your own POIs?
Yeah, I can't discuss what the POIs are.
Oh, God, I can just imagine.
There's also a program called Max Simple GPS. I think it's a little Java app. Let me open it up. That will let you go in and edit your own. If you have a lot of time to kill, this stuff is a lot of fun.
I do have to admit that I'm just a lot more adventurous when I have the TomTom, because I always know that I can get, I know I can find
I go off Market Street. Like, otherwise, I never go off Market Street.
Am I south of Market or north of Market right now?
I'm in Chinatown, and I'm tired. I want to go home.
I don't even know how someone operates in L.A. without GPS, because that's what got me. You know, it's the road trips that I have to do once a month in L.A. and have all these meetings. And I can't even imagine doing those without my GPS, because I just sit there and type it in. I don't need any directions or anything else.
The thing I love that Merlin mentioned is, like, you're hungry and you see like a Dairy Queen or something and you're just desperate and you're thinking you'll go, but you can punch in restaurants and then you find out two blocks away there's a 4-star restaurant you didn't know about.
Right.
Very handy for gas and stuff too.
So how long is the iPhone buzz going to continue? We'll be in the iPhone zone for how long before Apple then moves on to other new products? Is this going to be a 3-month period where we just talk about the iPhone or what?
Well, I'm already getting email from people going, what about version 2.0, Scott?
Well, I'm sure we'll start talking about that pretty quick, but
I think Apple will want to have other things going on by the middle of July. But I think that we're going to...
What will it be? I'm are we going to get an iPhone iPod? An iPod without the phone in it.
Yeah.
That's
what everybody wants.
I have to admit, after you look at the iPhone, you look at your iPod now, your video iPod, and you're like, come on, when am I going to get something,
I predict 3 weeks after the iPhone comes out, they're going to say, oh, by the way.
One more thing.
One more thing. Yeah, exactly. I think that, the iMacs are getting long on the tooth. I think we're probably due for a rev sometime this summer.
Apple Insider says mid to late summer. A radically redesigned 20 and 24-inch Mac iMac that'll be both slimmer and sleeker. It will represent the first major industrial design overhaul to hit the flagship all-in-one consumer Apple desktop in 3 years. 17-inch will not be touched.
I don't believe they're going to make any more 17s.
Yeah, interesting.
And then I think that I'm looking
forward
to
seeing... So the mini will be gone, the 17 will be gone. No 12-inch PowerBook. Is that just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger?
Laying the groundwork for the 9 to 12-inch portable that I think is going to be on the way. I've changed my mind. I'm going even further down. I'm going from wanting the 12-inch to now I
you
want
a 9-inch that swells to 12-inch.
Isn't that the original?
Yeah. And it's gonna ship with all the Beatles songs, and it's gonna be yellow.
Yay!
Rubbin, it turns into a briefcase.
It's a very small suitcase.
I think hopefully we're gonna see a real 8 processor machine too, because I think that the machines that we got right now are we can do 8 processor, but they're really 4 processor machines that they're putting 8 processors into. I think what we really need to see are ones where they brought up all of the infrastructure around the processors to really feed them properly. And so I think for performance, I mean, I know we're trying to stall, buying too many machines.
Yeah, I would stall right now. I think you're right.
Totally.
Something's gonna happen. Some interesting and kind of depressing news for Apple fans in terms of security. Of course, last week, the Safari for Windows came out, and immediately, well, first of all, 1 million downloads, which is amazing, but also immediately a number of security vulnerabilities, at last count, over 100 have been discovered, and Apple's issued 3 patches. Here's the thing. These security vulnerabilities are very, we talked about this, Merlin, on Twitter, are very much like the kinds of security vulnerabilities we've seen for years in Windows. And the thinking is, and I've read some more. My contention on Twit was, well, I think that's just because you're now in a Windows environment, and all the hackers now are looking at you. It's not that Safari, Apple tried to say the most secure. What did they say? Built secure from the ground up. Now I've just read an article by one hacker said, yeah, we use Fuzzr, which is a well-known not hacker but security company, which is a well-known Windows-based tool for finding vulnerabilities. There are a lot of tools on the Windows side for cracking this stuff. It just shows you that maybe all along people have been saying Apple succeeds is secure by obscurity. Might be right. I mean, boy, the Safari turned out to be a full of holes.
Well, Safari is, but we still haven't seen them go over to the Mac OS.
Well, because itself. They don't have those tools on the Mac side is what I'm saying. You've got these. As soon as Apple puts out a program on Windows and all the tools are available to attack it, they find all these holes.
I mean, I'm not here to apologize for Apple, but could that also be a result of just having so many more eyeballs? I mean, along the lines of, that's why open source works, is because there's so many people banging on it. And now that's something that all those folks can use, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of not surprised. And like I said on Twit, I guess I also don't really understand, because I'm not very smart, exactly where these vulnerabilities occur. And I wonder how much of it is in the Safari-ness of it.
No,
and how
it's
much
in Safari. It's in how Safari handles URLs. So
okay.
It's absolutely protocol, Safari. Yeah, it's absolutely Safari. So, I mean, I guess if all I'm saying here is it may be a clue to why Macs are more secure, and it's not, unfortunately, that they're inherently more secure, but merely that the tools and all the attackers and all the eyeballs are on the Windows side. And as soon as Apple puts out, I mean, Apple touted this. They said, Apple's engineers designed Safari to be secure from day one. It was only 4 hours later that the first holes were found.
I guess they need to regroup.
Yeah. Well, I just think that it's just maybe in defense of Windows a little bit. I've been absolutely one of the people who's been scathing on Microsoft security, but it may just be that nobody's secure. It's impossible to write a fully secure program, and you're just such a target on the Windows side that you're gonna if there's anything wrong at all, they're gonna find it right away, and apparently they have.
You know what Grandpappy says? He says, locks just keep the honest neighbors honest.
That's right. That's really true.
But a shotgun keeps everybody honest.
So. There you go. Well, I like that one good.
Pappy said that too. Hey, any other stories you want to cover before we move on to our picks?
No more
iPhone.
I'm exhausted and hungry.
Me too.
Let's
all right.
Pick.
Time for picks. Yes. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to give you our software picks of the week. But before we do that, it's time for our Audible pick of the week. Yes, once again, we thank the folks at Audible for their support of this podcast. And they're going to give you a free book. You can really pretty, if you're in the U.S., and I have to say this, I apologize. A lot of our international audience has written and said, well, I can't get all the books. And I know they're not all available. That's due to restrictions, copyright restrictions in the publishing industry. There's not anything we can do about it. But if you are in the U.S., you can get a free book from Audible, any of Audible's books. However, we like to recommend a book, and this time Scott Bourne has a book he wants to recommend from a guy with no hair.
Yeah, I'm heading that direction. So
I wasn't talking about you, but yeah, that could be true, too. No, we're talking about Seth Godin.
Seth Godin has a book that you can get on Audible.com, which I got on Audible.com, called The Big Move: Stop Trying to Be Perfect and Start Being Remarkable.
Seth is a marketing guy, right? Or is that
he's a marketing guru.
Yeah.
He writes stuff that a lot of times leave me thinking that he's really good at asking questions and not necessarily answering them. About half the time, though, he writes stuff that I find brilliant. This book's interesting because he interviewed like 32 big thinkers. In fact, you know, Mark Cuban, Guy Kawasaki, Balmer, all kinds of people wanted to find out what happened when you did something astonishing. For instance, you know, like the people that thought of TiVo or overnight shipping in FedEx. These are big moves in the parlance of this book. And I just particularly enjoy anything that has to do with avoiding mediocrity. And that's really where this book is going. And I'm into business, of course, so it's a business book. But if you have any interest in running your own business, doing your own marketing, or just learning more about how these really big moo events were created, you'll probably find this to be a pretty interesting book. And it's rated by the 234 people on Audible at 3.75 stars, which is pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah. Unabridged.
It's 3 hours, 42 minutes, and it's $15.95. And, you know, the guy charges like $1,500 an hour to consult. So not a bad deal.
Stop. This is actually our show motto. Stop trying to be perfect and start trying to be remarkable.
We don't have to worry about the perfect part.
We're remarkable. No question about that.
Remarkable doesn't mean necessarily good.
A lot of this podcast is like, go out there and try and be perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know.
No, we gave up on that ages ago.
Yeah.
Remarkable, I think we handle. Yes, you know, Seth is a very popular speaker, as you say. He's around a lot and is very widely regarded. And The Big Moo is, as you said, $15.95, except that it's free right now. If you're in the U.S. and you're a new Audible subscriber, you may leave your clothes on. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. Now, we haven't yet kind of wired this whole thing up so that you actually get the book on the page. So you'll have to do a search for Godin. You'll see actually some of his other books too, Godin. The Big Moo is the one that Scott wants you to get. That is audible.com/MacBreak. We thank Audible for their support. Now, ladies and gentlemen, our picks of the week. Who wants to start here? Merlin, you want to go? You start.
Sure. Yeah, this is going to be kind of a weird, geeky one. But I noticed somebody had slipped a interesting suggestion into the MBW Ideas, which is talking about something that our favorite program, Quicksilver, does that I am actually very fond of and not that many people know about. We'll take it as read that you know what Quicksilver is. It's an application for interacting with your Mac on many levels. It's kind of an application launcher, but it does a lot more. What people may not know is that there's this really neat thing called triggers, and triggers enable you to basically usually associate, say, a key command with a certain Quicksilver thing. So, for example, I can have it check my mail for me. I can have it upload a file. I can, you know, whatever. You can create and associate it with an F key or whatever you want to do. What a lot of people don't know is that there's this really cool little thing called mouse drag triggers. And I wanted to bubble this up because if you're a nerd and you like Quicksilver, you should give this a shot. Basically, you can go out and identify things like sides of your screen, corners of your screen, and key combinations and associate things dropped onto those areas with Quicksilver commands.
Ooh.
And so how would you use this? Well, one thing that's nice about Quicksilver, as we all know, is you're creating functional sentences. This is one way to think of this is that those corners and those sides provide the verb, like, for example, when I drop something on here, upload this to this particular FTP site. When I drop this here, drop whatever I opened in speed download and start downloading it. When I drop a string of text here, automatically create a new email and so on. And then the noun part of that, or the object, I guess, is provided by whatever you drop. This is super fast, super great way to, if there's something that you're doing constantly, you can come up with a really cool little mouse drag command.
How many different regions are there?
I'm going to go pull it up. There's a lot.
It's not just the four corners, then.
Well, no, because so let me see, mouse drop. Let's see. I need to go make a fakey one first. Hang on. Well, as if memory serves, you've got the left, right, top, bottom, and then you've got the corners, and right. then you can do a key command for each one of those. So you could say command,
shift, have a modifier. Okay.
Drag into the right side. And it's neat because, for example, the one I use a lot is, like I said, I'll drag something like an MP3 or whatever. I'll drag onto speed download, which is my lower right-hand corner, and that'll start doing it for me. So it's left, right, up, down, and then you can do command, option, shift, control, function, caps lock, in any combination you want, so you can do the math on how many of those you end up getting. So again, I mean, I think Transmit, for example, is one of the great underutilized Quicksilver supporting apps. Yeah. If you find yourself constantly dropping something into the same FTP folder, you can totally automate this by dropping it onto a corner.
Of course, Transmit allows you to make
DocSend.
Yeah, or even just an icon that you sit on the desktop. So
God, Transmit's so good. There's so many. They give you so many great ways to do stuff. But anyway, if you're looking for a nerdy way to extend your Quicksilver love, this is, I would call this a moderate to kind of more advanced tip. But look into, I mean, and then, of course, we can go even further. You can do things now where you can do keystrokes, for example. Like, not keystrokes, but you could draw on screen with something called Abracadabra, and it will, you draw a big S and it saves the document or whatever. There's endless ways to interface with Quicksilver, and I suggest trying mouse drag triggers.
Excellent. Is that
nerd?
Quicksilver's free, which is nice. It's quicksilver.blacktree.net.
Com.
I always do that. Com.
You have. We did that on MacBreak too.
I've done that many a time.
Are you using Quicksilver these days?
Oh, yeah. Nonstop. Constantly.
What's your favorite Quicksilver thing right now? What do you use it for a lot?
You know, I still am just a very simple user. I use the, I've tried your, you know, text, adding, appending to text, and I have all those things set up, lots of triggers set up, but I pretty much, you know, it's the command space and type the first few letters. That's pretty much what I do all the time.
You know how I'm always bitching about Spotlight and how I hate the UI for Spotlight? I've started using Quicksilver as my way into Spotlight. You can search, there's several ways you can search Spotlight from inside of Quicksilver. So you can hit period to start entering your terms and then say you want to open that in a Spotlight window. And it's a lot faster. The independent pop-up Mystery Meet window. It's a lot faster than going through the thing in the upper right corner.
Cool. Hey, this is kind of related. This is another application that allows you to drag and drop. And I have to thank CB for sending this along as an email and a recommendation. And, you know, I there's so many great programs out there. I probably wouldn't have paid too much attention to it, even though I trust CB's recommendations, until I saw that it was from Michael Tsai, the guy at C Command who does SpamSieve. Great programmer, does really great software. And it's called Eagle Filer. Have you tried this yet?
I played with it. It looks pretty cool.
We've talked about Yojimbo before, and I use Yojimbo. This is in that category of kind of note-taking applications. And Yojimbo's been my default for a long time because it has a lot of nice features like syncing through the iDisk, and it has a lot of command keys. It's got a little drop panel and so forth. But one thing that I don't like about Yojimbo, and a lot of people complain about, is the lack of folders. So this may be the response. Eagle Filer, $40, but free for 30 days. Uses Growl. F1 is the default key. You press F1 when you're on a web page. It'll drop it in. Or email, or pretty much anything. A couple of things I like about it, instead of using a proprietary database, it uses Core Data, so it is very Mac-centric.
Oh, tasty.
I think Core Data is really important. Core Data is a great, you know, built-in database in the Mac, and I'm glad they use it. Everything's stored in a library. I keep my library on my iDisk, so it syncs automatically. You can browse the contents of the library in the Finder or the Pathfinder, so even though it's stored in Core Data and it has all the speed and functionality of a database, it is browsable as text files, which I think it can even be edited in your favorite application. So it's kind of a best of both worlds. You can tag and add notes to any data. It's an interesting, if you're looking for ways to keep track of, by the way, multiple libraries too. So
it combines nice features of a lot of applications.
Exactly.
It's a little like Yojimbo. It's a little like DevonThink. It's got that, what's that called, notational velocity, kind of fast substring, like searching, ahead searching.
I like that.
And the tagging, it looks like the tagging works with mail tags, too. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
built-in PDF viewing.
Good pick.
It's funny because I have every one of these, from Circus Ponies and Note Taker and all of them. Because I'm always looking for the perfect one, and this is just another one to try. And, you know, everyone has its own pluses and minuses. I pretty much settled on Yojimbo for a long time, but I'm really looking at Eagle Filer. And by the way, it does import from other, I believe it'll import for your other notebooks, making it easy for you to try it. It has some interesting features that you might want to take a look. Well, I'll tell you what, just take a look at it. It's free to try and $40 to buy. It's from c-command.com, Eagle Filer, from the same guy who does the best anti-spam filter on the Macintosh spam sieve, Michael Tsai. That's my pick for the week. Scott Bourne, you got one for us?
Well, let me unglaze my eyes here for a minute.
Are you bored?
Let's talk about something cool that's not that hard to understand.
Okay.
Cash Out X. Has anybody ever heard of that?
No, what's that?
It is a cool program that deletes, clears your cache files, swap files, all that boo-rah. You know, when I got my, you know, my Mac understanding, I was always thinking, you know, it was cool. You could just delete programs by dragging them to the trash. And then one day I realized I had 2.9 million files that were unrelated to anything. And it's because these cache files and swap files from all these different things from browsers and browser histories were still there and some application leftovers. And this thing clears anything that's laying in your cache out for you. And it's free.
Cool.
Called Cash Out X.
Cash Out X.
And I found it at a place called MacGamesAndMore.com.
Cool. Thanks, by the way.
Again. Version Tracker as well.
Say again?
And you can find it at Version Tracker as well.
Okay. Hey, by the way, I do want to thank CB for that recommendation for Eagle Filer. And now it's time for the long-lost Alex Lindsay, who has had months to come up with his pick of the week.
And over those months, I have been dealing with lots and lots of projects, you know, to keep track of things, and dealing with ones that are happening. I'm in Africa, and they're happening here, and the thing that I became a little obsessed with is really starting to really do some experimentation with project management. So for a long time, we've used FastTrack, you know, I've used FastTrack for kind of working out ideas, and I started to kind of, you know, it's fine. I wasn't blown away by it, but it was the thing that I could use. And the one that I'm experimenting with now that I'm actually I'm pretty excited about, actually, I know this is like the productivity set of picks this week, but have you guys seen Merlin?
Well, I think he's been on the show all week. I don't
yes Merlin, you can see yourself.
A lot of people really dig Merlin. Yeah.
What is Merlin?
So Merlin is a project management, and they say it's with a bit of magic. And I have to say that it's pretty close.
I think they're capitalizing on our friends here. I know. Well-known
name. They said that they named it after Merlin, you know, because it's very effective. And what it is it's basically, it's a project management software that lets you kind of plan out a project, plan out when things are going to start and you can build big Gantt charts. You know, and really set the endpoints and outpoints of when things are going to set up. You can set up dependencies. So if something starts going over, you know, over deadline, it'll start pushing out the other things that are getting affected by it. So you can set up hard relationships between things getting done and when the next things have to start. And you can also look at how things are going. So, for instance, there's a net plan, which tells you basically kind of like a flow chart of how, you know, where everything's going from where, you know, from this place to this place. You have it'll show you the utilization. So it'll show you like how much everybody is working. So if you've set up the project being, you know, this person's doing this and this person's doing that, you can see over the week whether they're, you know, whether they're at 100% or 60% or 400% of what they can actually get done. It allows you to have just a lot of control and really just a lot of data in front of you. And I'm finding that this is really, really important as we get more and more projects that are coming through the pipe. You know, you can't keep it in your head and you can't keep it on Excel and you can't keep it on. You need something with a little bit more, you know, a little bit more power to kind of keep track of what's going on in a lot of different projects that are all happening at the same time. And, you know, another good one, OmniPlan. Omni just came, you know, Omni, you know, the great company that has tons of great software that I use almost all the time. They have one. It's good. I don't think it's quite as developed yet. I think it's kind of a version one. Merlin is a lot more developed. Merlin, have you played with Merlin?
I played with it a really ever since I was 13.
Oh dear!
We'll fix that in post.
EMI.
I played with it a long time ago, and I thought it looked pretty good. It's interesting you say this because you know I used to have a former life as a project manager, and this is definitely one of those areas where, in my experience, Windows have, for years has had us licked. There used to be Mac Project, you know. Mm-hmm. There's been the MS Project, and I don't want to diss Fast Track Scheduler. I used it for a couple years. I always found it kind of un-Mac-like.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's been my problem.
It's very carbony. It's got that very carbony. I don't know. Again, I haven't used it in years, but no, these are great little applications. And of course, for most people, I've got to say, for most people, I would discourage getting too fiddly with project management stuff. But if you are going to build a bridge or something and you need to have effort, you know, stuff and time estimates, these are both really, I think I like OmniPlan. I work with those guys. I played with Merlin a little bit. I'll have another look at it, but I remember thinking it looked pretty cool.
You know, it's one of those things that we didn't need it. I mean, there was, and people would say, oh, we got to get a bunch of software together. And I'd say, well, you know, I can still keep track of it in Word, you know what I mean? Or in text. You know, I can keep track of where everything is and everything. You know, I don't need a lot of the stuff. And now we've just gotten to this point while I was gone of just there's too many projects and too many dependencies and too many different people. And we really realized we needed a lot more teeth.
My only piece of it, this is not going to be for everybody, but my only piece of advice on that, just from my own experience, is I think these tools are fantastic for deriving estimates and kind of coming up with high and low end. Like, we think this will take between 3 and 7 weeks to do. Where I personally ran into trouble with project management apps is I find that if you really want to keep them up to date, you really almost have to have a dedicated person who does nothing but keep that app up to date. Because, I mean, in my experience, those things, especially in software development, tend to be basically dead the minute you hit save. And so I find them super useful for planning and especially super useful for finding out, like, proof of concept. Is this a practical idea? Is this something we can really do in 6 weeks?
I think a lot of times what happens is it almost forces you to think it out, you know.
It totally does.
As you start to, what I find is that I just need something to visually plan this thing out and suddenly realize that, oh, I need more resources over here.
It's a great way to do a brain dump and then realize dependencies you didn't even know were there. So yeah, totally useful for that.
Yeah.
All right. There's our picks. Well, that wraps it up for the show. I thank you all. Next week, we'll talk a little bit more about the iPhone. we'll plan our assault on the iPhone. That's for sure. Meanwhile, I want to tell folks who are going to the Jaiku party, which is tonight, Tuesday night in San Francisco, that they've moved it once again because it's so popular that we've outgrown two locations. I don't know if you were going to go to it, guys, but... We were going to be at Adaptive Path. Now we've moved to the Ritual Coffee Roasters. So
where's that?
That is on Valencia Street, 1026 Valencia Street. But if you go to upcoming.org, you'll see the map. Now I have to say it's full. And one of the reasons we keep moving is because it keeps growing and there's even 75 people on the waiting list. But if you get on the waiting list, and then show up, we may be able to get you in. I sure like to. We're giving away Twit stuff. There's going to be free herring.
Boy, can you get me on the list?
Pickled herring.
I signed up to go, Leo, because, you know, Padanga, we're sponsoring Supernova. So
yeah,
it's
part of Supernova. So please, good. I'd love to see you. I hope you'll come out, Merlin and Alex, too. And
what time is it?
6 to 10 on Valencia Street. Come by. Just say you know me.
Okay.
And we'll get you in. And then for the rest of you, if you go to upcoming.org and get on the waiting list, I can't promise everybody will get in. There's fire laws and so forth. We got like 300 people coming.
You guys got to let me in. I interrupt like half a dozen of his podcasts every week.
Yeah, just say that. Say, I may not be perfect, but I am remarkable.
I am totally remarkable.
And they'll let you in. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. The mounting excitement. Don't forget, if you want to know more about the iPhone and who doesn't, make sure you listen to the Apple Phone Show at theapplephoneshow.com. If you want to know more about Merlin, of course, themerlinshow.com and 43folders.com. And you could get into Pixel Core. This is a great time to do it during the summer where you get a summer-long membership for just $50 for all 3 months at pixelcore.com. Alex Lindsay, thanks for joining us. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Mac Break has done broke.